वन्दे रूप सनातनो रघुजुगो श्रीजीव गोपालको
वन्दे रूप सनातनो रघुजुगो श्रीजीव
श्री श्री सद्गोस्वामी प्रभुगान की I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. So, how is everyone doing today? Very good. You all are ready for the nectar of devotion as a subject of your Bhakti Shastri. Shastri means one who is expert in Shastra. It's a very elevated title. And when I was young in my neighborhood, there was an elderly person. And he was a Shastri, and we used to call him Mr. Shastri. Those days I didn't know the meaning of the word Shastri, but actually he was a very learned scholar. He was a professor in the university, and he was a Shastri. But Prabhupada is creating so many Shastris all over the world. Bhakti Shastri, we are not ordinary Shastris, we are Bhakti Shastris. And Nectar of Devotion is the book on Bhakti. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The ocean of Nectar of Devotion. And so we'll start from the chapter 1 today. The chapter 1 is describing the characteristics of pure devotional. The characteristics of pure devotional service. It begins with a quote. Actually, original Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is full of quotes from the scriptures. You remember this verse, Nana Shastra Vicharinanta, analyzing various scriptures. These six Goswamis have established the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't write anything. In the written form that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave are only the Sikshashtaka, the 8 verses of Sikshashtaka. And in these 8 verses of Sikshashtaka, what did Sanatana Goswami and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did? What did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do in these 8 verses? He simply established the holy name. What is the holy name? The holy name is non-different from Krishna. The entire potency of Krishna has been invested in the holy name. So if the entire potency of Krishna is there, then that indicates that the holy name is Krishna himself. And one should chant the holy name, and what's the benefit of chanting the holy name? How should one chant the holy name? That is another thing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very clearly indicating, that anybody can chant the holy name. Under any condition one can chant the holy name. At any place one can chant the holy name. There is no restrictions or rules and regulations pertaining to the chanting of the holy name. Anybody under any condition at any place can chant the holy name. And what's the benefit? The benefit is the highest spiritual achievement. In one hand, it is so easy, it is available to everybody, yet the benefit is inconceivable. And then it has described what are the qualifications, in what kind of consciousness we should chant the holy name. And then the effects of the holy name. What happens when one chants the holy name? It actually points out that one achieves the ultimate loving exchange with Krishna in the mellow of friendship, conjugal and parental. So this is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu simply gave that, the highest spiritual gift Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has awarded to everyone. And for that there is no consideration of qualification. Now the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they actually applied, they scrutinizingly studied all the scriptures and established, because unless and until something is established on the basis of the scriptures, the learned community will not accept it. In the Vedic culture, in the Vedic society, the mood is like that, or the standard is that. You are saying something, what is the proof? What is the authority? What is the validity of your statement? Therefore, everything must be substantiated with the scriptural evidence. So that's what the Goswamis did. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, not only the six Goswamis, all the Goswamis of Vrindavan took it upon themselves to establish the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially the six Goswamis. And that is why we are singing this particular verse. Nana Shastra Vicharinaika Nipuno. Very expertly analyzing, scrutinizingly studying, they got all the evidences from the scriptures to establish the teachings of Sri Chaitanya. Eka Saddharma Sangsthapako. Saddharma, the ultimate dharma. Dharma means the inherent characteristics of a substance. That's the real meaning of the word dharma. Like water, whenever you see water, what is the inherent characteristic of water? Liquidity. Right? So liquidity is the dharma of water. Wherever there is fire, there is, what is inherent characteristics of fire? Heat and light. So these are the dharma of fire. Similarly, jiva is an entity. Jiva is a substance. Living entities are a somebody, something. What are the inherent characteristics of a jiva? The inherent characteristics of jiva is actually to love Krishna. That is the dharma of jiva, and that's why it's called sat dharma. Sat dharma. Sat means eternal. Sat means ultimate. Sat means actual. So the actual characteristic, inherent characteristics of a living entity is to love Krishna. So what did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu give? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established that. Love Krishna. Loving Krishna is the ultimate goal of life. So that is the characteristics of pure devotional service. So there is as I was saying, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, all the six Goswamis, they have collected the evidences to establish Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami has done that to establish the mellows of devotional service, different aspects of devotional service, different mellows of devotional service. These mellows are known as bhakti rasa. And here is the ocean of bhakti rasa collected from the Vedic literatures. So here is a quotation from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is a statement by Kapila Dev to his mother. My dear mother, those who are my pure devotees and who have no desire for material benefit or philosophical speculation, have their minds so much engaged in my service that they are never interested in asking me for anything except to be engaged in the service. They do not even beg to live in my abode with me. So he is establishing what is the pure devotional service. In pure devotional service, one does not want anything but to serve Krishna. They don't even want elevation to the spiritual sky. To live with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that desire also is not there with them. A pure devotee simply wants to serve Krishna. Then it has been pointed out that there are five kinds of liberation. Those liberations are to become one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to have the same form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to live in the same planet with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to become an associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or to acquire the qualities or the opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are the five kinds of liberation. But a pure devotee doesn't even want, especially the first one, a pure devotee never ever wants. The first one that I mentioned is to become one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is known as Sarvajya Mukti. They of course do not say one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but one with the Brahma Jyoti. Their understanding is that ultimately the Supreme is light, a spiritual light, and to merge in that Brahma Jyoti. Why they don't do that? Because in that liberation, there is no possibility of loving exchange. If there is me alone and nobody else, can there be love? Can there be loving relationship? So love means reciprocation between two individuals. And the expression of that reciprocation is service. That's why it is called loving devotional service. So there are five kinds of liberation. Now the Sajujya Mukti, a devotee doesn't even want to have it. They can't stand to hear the name of this Mukti, Sajujya Mukti. Like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was having his encounter with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, instead of using the word mukti, he used the word bhakti in one sloka that he quoted. Because he was so allergic, so sensitive to the expression mukti, he didn't want to use that word mukti, liberation. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu corrected him, told him, no, scripture should not be altered. That is one very important thing. The scripture should be presented as it is. And just as Prabhupada presented Bhagavad Gita as it is, it's never to be altered. And it has this standard, has been maintained. This standard has been maintained in India all along. Sometimes people come up with some argument, these are concocted ideas, different people. Sometimes in India people say, some people, some uh, p- people, those who are recognized as big scholars, but they are actually big fools. They say that Vasudev is not one person. There are many people who wrote, and those who wrote this, they got a title as Vyasa. Now the thing is, when you read the Vedic scriptures, Mahabharata and Purana, we see the personality of Vasudev. His father's name is there, his mother's name is there, how he was born, he was there, why he got such a name is there, but these fools say that the Vasudev is not a one person. In this way, there are many concoction goes on. Like, we often in India meet with such challenges. And in that respect, when you're confronted with such challenges, we just say that, look, in India since time immemorial, the Vedic scriptures has been respected with all reverence. And no one ever imposed any ideas like you are doing. Whatever has been written in the Vedas are the absolute truth and nothing but. And one example we give, that there is a Bhagavad Gita written in North India 5,000 years ago. A Bhagavad Gita written in West India 3,000 years ago. Bhagavad Gita written in South India 2,000 years ago. And Bhagavad Gita written in East India 500 years ago. At different times, see the length of difference of time and the distance, because communication was not so easy to open. But all these Bhagavad Gitas have particular number of verses, like 700 verses, 18th chapter. Each chapter has certain number of, so absolutely same. So if people introduce their own ideas, then obviously all the four Bhagavad Gitas presented in four different times wouldn't have been the same. And that's not the case with Bhagavad Gita, that's the case with every single scripture. Srimad Bhagavatam, 12 cantos, 18,000 verses. I'm sorry, 1800. No, is it? 18,000, yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, that's true. So this is how we can see that nobody ever tampered the Vedic literature. Nobody ever dared to touch the Vedic. They have accepted as it is. So, and there are four kinds of positive liberation, but a devotee, even when he is given those liberation, he doesn't want to accept them unless there is the possibility of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like, there are four types of positive liberation. Having this opportunity to live with the same planet with the Lord, become an associate with the Lord, have the same form as the Lord, like in Vaikuntha. These are all Vaikuntha liberation. Same form as the Lord, and to have the same opulence as the Lord. But a devotee, diyamanam na grinhanti bina mat sevanam jana. Even if they are offered to them, they don't want to accept it unless there is opportunity to serve them. So then Rupa Goswami explains the six characteristics of pure devotional service. Those six characteristics of pure devotional service are, in Sanskrit, they are called kleshagni. The first, pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. As you engage in devotional service, it immediately brings freedom from distress. Kleshagni. Klesha means distress. And gna means to kill. Pure devotional service is a killer. of distress. Klesha Kani. Just as you're familiar with the word Klesha, Klesha Adhikataras Tesham Abhyakta Shakta Chetasam, Bhagavad Gita. Klesha means distress, and Gna means to kill. Just like the word Ripu Gna, are you familiar with the name Ripu Gna? Ripu means enemy, and Gna, the killer. So Krishna is the killer of enemies. Don't become Krishna's enemy, you'll be in trouble. So Klesha Gna means, Klesha Gni means one who kills kleshas, distresses. Then Shubhada, the next characteristic of pure devotional service is that it brings all auspiciousness. Shubha, it brings all auspiciousness. Pure devotional, the third one, pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasures. Sandrananda Visheshatma. So pure devotional service brings pleasure. In one hand, it destroys all distresses. When the distresses are destroyed, then what happens automatically? You don't have any distress. You are joyful. So that's how pure devotional service, the third characteristic is that pure devotional service frees one, pure devotional service brings all auspiciousness. It's the beginning of all devotional service. I'm sorry, pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. Pure devotional service is rarely achieved. Sudurlabha. Pure devotional service is very rarely achieved. Will anybody believe it now? This point? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given it so easily, so readily, so freely. So that's why this point is not so easily understandable and detectable. But actually, when you go into the scriptures, then you see pure devotional service is so rare. You know, pure devotional service is rare for Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma rarely gets pure devotional service. Braja Prem. Lord Shiva rarely gets pure devotional. Lord Shiva had to dress up like a gopi to get into Vrindavan. Gopeshwar Shiva. Brahma, Shiva, this is Brahmara Durlabha Prem Shabakare Chachi. Although it is rare for Lord Brahma, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going and offering it to everybody. Come, take it. Nityananda Prabhu is begging everybody, going from door to door and begging in a very humble state, humble way. Please take it. And you know what he is saying, Nityananda Prabhu? He is not only saying, please take it. He is saying, he is making a condition that if you take it, then I will become your servant. I will become sold out to you. I will become sold out. If you accept this, then I will be responsible. I'll take the responsibility to take you across the ocean of material nature. So this is how Nityananda Prabhu is begging everybody to accept Krishna consciousness or pure devotional service. Those in pure devotional service deride even the concept of liberation. Even liberation becomes insignificant. People think liberation is so important. but compared to pure devotional service, liberation is absolutely insignificant. Actually, liberation, personified. You see, liberation is actually a personality. Just as bhakti is a personality, bhakti devi, mukti also is a personality known as mukti devi. And mukti devi with a mukulitanjali, with folded hands, praying to a devotee, please allow me to do something for you. Sevate ashmi. And pure devotional service is the only means to attract Krishna. It is only through pure devotional service that Krishna can be attracted. And then it goes to the first aspect of... So, Krishna is all attractive, but pure devotional service attracts even Him. Krishna is all attractive, but pure devotional service attracts even Krishna. This means that pure devotional service is even transcendentally stronger than Krishna Himself, because it is Krishna's internal potency. So, now, out of these four, out of these six, I'll cover four. Like, you got I'll cover first four, and then the two and other aspect of the entire chapter, entire division of Nectar of Devotion, the wave, the eastern wave, which is actually known by Madananda, will cover. Yesterday I told you to read and come back with questions. So at this point, before I go into the next two, relief from material distress and bringing auspiciousness, all auspiciousness, these two chapters we'll discuss today. Before I do that, I was wondering whether I should have a little question answer session at this point. Yes, Madananda.
So Maharaj, on the five kinds of liberation that are listed, I can easily understand how Swarup Vimukti is totally rejected. But becoming liberated on and going to the same planet as the Lord, how is that not a desirable thing? Because if the same planet, then there's service. So, but that's not acceptable, or is it?
Yeah, very good.
Question of the attitude.
Yeah, you see, these four kinds of liberations are Vaikuntha liberations, and in Vaikuntha, that loving exchange is not as intense as in Vrindavan. So that's why a devotee who has got the taste or got to know about the Vrindavan devotion don't want that. Because they are not going to settle for anything less than Vrindavan. Not even Vaikuntha. So that is actually...
And so that would be the same for becoming a companion in the Vaikuntha planets. It wouldn't be the same intimate...
And not that, because the... because Vrindavan actually allows some very special relationship in friendship. And actually, it is the predominant mellow of Vrindavan is conjugal. Friendship and parental are the propping aspects of that devotion, propping that conjugal relationship. Yes?
Maharaj, concerning the same five types of liberation, it's not clear to me how they are different, because if one is Salokya living in the same on the same planet, then it seems as though Sarupya having the same form would mean on the same planet also. Or the others, so how are they different, having the same form as the Lord, as compared to being on the same planet as the Lord? I don't see difference between that. Can you explain a bit?
Yeah. The thing is that, you see, one with Sarupya can also be in Salakya. Right? The one can have the same form as the Lord and also can be in the same planet as the Lord. But that doesn't necessarily mean those who have the same form of the Lord have to be in the same planet of the Lord. You get it? Like, one can have both the liberation simultaneously, both the qualities, spiritual qualities, the form and the situation in the same planet. But that doesn't mean that everybody has to be endowed with the same form in the same planet. Like, for example, you see, in that respect, to understand these points, Brihad Bhagavatamritam is a very good book, very good scripture written by Sanatana Goswami. You see, there is a second part of Brihad Bhagavatamritam is describing the journey of a cowherd boy back to the spiritual sky, Golok Vrindavan. So when he is in Vaikuntha, he still retains his cowherd boy's form. And the residents of Vaikuntha were asking him, why are you still retaining this form, you know, like you can have your, you know, here everybody has the same form as the Lord, like four-armed forms. But he did not want that. So here's an example. He was in the Salakya. He was in the same planet with the Lord, but he didn't have that same four-armed form. Is it clear? Like, one can, you know, yes, in Vaikuntha, most of the residents have the same form, four-armed form. But still there are some residents, those who do not have the same form. Right? Another consideration is that there are four-armed representatives of the Lord who are guarding. They're always, you know, there to help the devotees. They're patrolling around. They have four-armed forms, but they are not in Vaikuntha. They are actually patrolling around here.
What would it mean to have the same opulence as the Lord? Because he's the possessor of all opulences.
Same opulence as the Lord means, like, not absolutely same. Not, because Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, endowed with all six opulences. But to some extent, these opulences are available to some residents, some associates of the Lord, some devotees of the Lord. That is called Shashti. And that same opulence, Prabhupada actually has explained that. Yeah, anyway, in course of reading this, you'll see, I don't remember. Like, that point Prabhupada actually makes clear in that one gets the similar kind of opulences, but nobody can have these six opulences to an absolute extent. Yes.
So, in regards to these five kinds of liberations, so, how does one get liberated to that position? It's that they have a desire to have the same opulences of Krishna, but it's not a material desire? How do they get there?
Yeah, very good. Very good point. You see, devotion means... Okay, first of all, it is only through devotion one can have these liberations. Hmm. Devotion begins with surrender. Devotional service to the Lord begins with surrender. That means no independent desire. Completely subordinate to the Lord's desire. Devotee is not desiring them, but the Lord is awarding them to him. So he is not saying, give me this. He is not saying, give me Sarupya, give me Salakya, and so on. But he is, by the mercy of the Lord, elevated to that situation And these opulences, when the Lord gives, it is in order to accomplish something or in order to enhance his pastimes. That's how he actually gives these opulences to
others. So then if the Lord wants to give those opulences, a devotee should surrender to the will of the Lord. But sometimes he doesn't want to surrender to take that.
Okay, good point. Very good. Like, yes, when you are in Mahaprabhu's pastimes, in Sankirtan, then you say, yeah, give me. If I get oil, I'll use it in spreading Krishna consciousness. Right? But in Vrindavan, it's a hindrance. In Vrindavan pastimes, the opulence will become a hindrance. So that's why devotees simply want to be in the simple atmosphere of the village as Krishna's friends, cowherd boys. Krishna himself has rejected his opulence there. Opulence because Aisharya Shithil, love, becomes hindered and obstructed when there is opulence. Like an ordinary girl, if he comes across a prince and she knows that he is a prince, she'll be afraid to even go near him. But if the prince gives up, you know, his royal situation and becomes an ordinary person, then an ordinary girl and the prince can have a loving exchange. So that's why the opulence is missing in Vrindavan. In the loving exchange with the Lord, opulence is missing. Opulence is absent. But your mood is Sankirtan mood. Like, well, if we get money, yeah, sure, we'll. Like Prabhupada once said, that the difference between us and the Mayavadis is that you give the Mayavadis some money, they'll take their hands at the back and say, we don't touch money. But if somebody comes and gives us money, we take it to the right hand and we stretch our left hand for some more. Yes.
May I ask another question?
Yes, sure.
So on the characteristics of pure devotional service, there's devotional service is rarely achieved. So am I understanding correctly from your explanation how Lord Chaitanya, now he's distributed the opportunity to everyone. So in this age, in this time, it's not really, it's available. It's more readily available. Previously it wasn't available.
Right.
And therefore, it was rarely achieved.
Right.
It's not that pure devotional service is rarely achieved. Many people start the process, but they don't come to pure devotional. That's not the case.
It is like to become a billionaire. It's very difficult. Only few people can achieve that. But if a zillionaire comes and picks up a beggar from the street and says, come, take a few billions from me, I'm just giving it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Then the beggar can become a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
So our situation is like that. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he actually is distributing it, giving it. Like, you know, for a beggar to become a billionaire is impossible, right? But if the king invites all the beggars and says, all the beggars come to my palace, and he opens his treasury and tells them, take as much wealth you want from my treasury. It's open. Take it as much as you want. The king can do that, right? And he has enough money to make all the beggars into billionaires. But a king generally doesn't do that. But what if the king becomes mad? You see, according to the law, nobody can oppose, nobody can stand against the king's wish. At least in Vedic culture, no one could stand up against, because that would consider to be mutiny. So if the king went mad and he opened up his treasury and invited everybody and said, come, take as much wealth as you want. And if he, then all the rich, all the poor people can become rich. Now, the king of kings became mad. And he started to act in this way. And that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He became mad in ecstatic love of Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radha. That's why he is behaving so erratically, unpredictably. Yes?
I have two questions. First is, you mentioned about Bhakti Devi. So, isn't Krishna the only person who can avoid liberation? And who is Bhakti
Devi? Yeah, through the agency of Bhakti Devi. Krishna awards, but the personality who hands it over is the personality.
So she's surely not a demigod because demigods?
No. She is also Krishna's potency. These are all Krishna's potency. Like Bhakti Devi is Krishna's internal potency. These are all Krishna's internal potency.
And the other question I have is, so when we are living in the nectar of devotion, when they refer to pure devotional service, does that always refer to rush prema? Because like my thinking is, if a jiva is, like his constitutional position is that to be in Vaikuntha, then isn't that pure devotional service for him?
It is pure devotional service, but here, when we are discussing about pure devotional service, that is Vrindavan, prema, brajo prema, specific love of Vrindavan. Yes?
Maharaj, please forgive my ignorance, but now I was wondering, who goes to Vaikuntha? Are they worship Lakshmi Narayana or? Okay.
Yeah. Those who worship Lakshmi Narayana, not only Lakshmi Narayana, those who worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, following Vaidhi Bhakti, following the rules and regulations of the scriptures, they go to Vaikuntha. Like, you see, following the rules and regulations of the scriptures means worshipping the Lord as the Lord. If you worship the Lord as the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then naturally, when he achieves his perfection, he goes to Vaikuntha, where Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. But in Vrindavan, Krishna is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Vrindavan, Krishna is a cowherd boy. And in Vrindavan, you see, when you know the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you can have only one relationship with him, servitorship. He is the Lord and Master. So who are you? Servant. But when he is a cowherd boy, then he can be your friend. You can treat him as your son, or you can treat him as your lover. Yes, Anjali?
Mahaprabhu said that you should always have the mood of the servant, of the servant, of the servant. So how does it go with friendship, parenting and conjugal?
Yeah, very good. The general mood of service is servant of the servant of the servant. But when Krishna becomes pleased, then he takes you to Vrindavan. And when you are in Vrindavan, then Krishna awards you a specific relationship. That's up to him. Devotee's mood is, I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. With that mood, he is serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. He is spreading Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. But then, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is pleased with him, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reveals his identity as Radha Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha Krishna. So in the personality or instead of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, devotee sees Radha Krishna. And when one is seeing Radha Krishna, where is he? He is in Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan he develops a specific relationship, because in Vrindavan these are the three predominating mellows. So, friendship, parental, conjugal. And the basic mood is actually conjugal. You are seeing Radha Krishna. What is the mood? Conjugal. But then, inherently, you will develop a specific attitude. That will be your mellow. That is, we have to understand that that's rewarded by Krishna. Yes, Madhavi?
But Maharaj, when you answered her question, you were saying about the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti brings one to Vaikuntha, and that's what we're doing. That's what we're studying here. So
yeah.
Are we just going to go to Vaikuntha?
Brilliant question. Thank you. Thank you. You see, after performing his pastimes in Vrindavan, in Dwapar Yuga, end of Dwapar Yuga, Krishna considered that I reveal my Braja Leela, but how will anyone ever enter into Braja Leela? Because everybody serves me in Vaidhi Bhakti. And by performing Vaidhi Bhakti, when one achieves his perfection, he is elevated to Vaikuntha. Because the goal of Vaidhi Bhakti is Vaikuntha. Right? Now, once you go to Vaikuntha, that means you are already situated in your sarup there. So there is no question of changing your sarup, and, or in simple words, from Vaikuntha there is no access to Vrindavan. So Krishna considered what to do. I reveal my Braja Leela. And how will anyone ever enter into Braja Leela? Because everybody will serve me through Vaidhi Bhakti, and by performing Vaidhi Bhakti he'll go to Vaikuntha. Therefore, Krishna decided to appear as a devotee. So when that devotee Krishna is worshipped in Vaidhi Bhakti, through Vaidhi Bhakti, then that leads him to Vrindavan. Okay, another way of looking at it is, through Vaidhi Bhakti, one goes to Vaikuntha. It is through Raganuga Bhakti that one goes to Vrindavan. And now the consideration is, like, this is actually a very important point, because, you know, a lot of misconception is flying in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Some people are just saying all kinds of things, you know, and misleading the devotees. The thing is that we can't jump into Raganuga Bhakti. Indirectly that has been indicated by Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatra Vidhin Bina, Pancharatra Vidhin Bina, Oikantiki Harer Bhakti Utpatoiva Kalpati. Without following the teaching or the instructions of Shruti, Vedas, Smriti, Puran, Pancharatra Vidhi, Pancharatra, if one executes sincere, earnest devotional service, that only creates a disturbance in the society. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that means, like, one must follow Vaidhi Bhakti. By following Vaidhi Bhakti only we can execute our devotion. So otherwise it will create a disturbance. So now, Krishna assumed the mood of a devotee. Whose mood? Achha, now let us consider, what is Raganuga Bhakti? Rag means love. And the residents of Vrindavan have only love for Krishna. Therefore, those devotees are called Ragatmika Bhaktas. Ragatmika, their own entire existence is due to love of Krishna. So, though when one follows those devotees, that becomes Raga Bhakti. Ragatmika, to follow, Anuga means to follow, Anugami, Anugaman. So, Anugaman, to follow, when one follows the Ragatmika Bhakta, that becomes Raganuga Bhakti. So, to follow a Ragatmika Bhakta is Raganuga Bhakti. Follow a Ragatmika Bhakta or Braja is Raganuga Bhakti. Right? Okay, now, whose mood Sri Krishna assumed as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Srimati Radharani. When you are following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are you following? Srimati Radharani, the best of Ragatmika Bhaktas. So, you see, in Vaidhi Bhakti we are serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sankirtan. Like Vidhi means scriptural injunction, how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should be served? Jaggai Sankirtana Praya. Through Sankirtan he is served, and that is the scriptural injunction. The Vaidhi Bhakti to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Sankirtan. But while we are serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we are automatically following Srimati Radharani. Therefore, the Vaidhi Bhakti is being transformed into Radharani Bhakti. And that is how it's opening the gate to Vrindavan. Yes, you have a question?
Yesterday we were talking a little bit about finding a spiritual master. And my understanding is that
is Vaidhi and Raghunatha Bhakti. Anyway, first of all, is there much of a difference between faith and trust? It's the same thing. Right? So, what's your question? Faith and... You started off with the question with Prabhupada said faith and Sanatana Goswami says trust. So, is there any difference? Okay, that ultimate, you see, faith is the beginning, adau shraddha. But the faith follows some process. Right? Adau shraddha, then shraddha leads to what? Shraddha leads to association of devotees, sadhu sangha. Then bhajana kriya. And that is the stage of initiation. And as you render devotional service under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, then the impediments on the path or obstacles from the path of devotion becomes removed and your devotion becomes fixed. You become fixed in your devotion. And when your devotion becomes fixed, you begin to get the taste. The taste then leads to attachment. Attachment leads to experiencing spiritual emotions. And that spiritual emotion matures into love of Krishna. So these are the gradual development. So when it comes to that state of mature development into love, then in that loving exchange, things happen. In that loving exchange between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the devotee, The devotee sees Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Radha Krishna. That is how he enters into Vrindavan. That is how Vaidhi Bhakti is transformed into Raganuga Bhakti and entrance to Vrindavan. Alright? Okay. Yes?
That it brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. So we know that sometimes when one first comes to devotional service, there's like what they call shadow attachment. And when one first comes to devotional service, there's like that shadow attachment, and they feel such relief from being in the material world. But then, is it that as we go on in our devotional service, there are different obstacles? So is it to the degree that our devotional service is not pure that we feel still the pangs of distress at different times?
Yeah, as you mentioned yourself, it's a shadow. Therefore, it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
One is hungry, and if he sees the reflection of food, will his hunger be subsided? No. So the real, until he gets the real thing, his heart will not be content. But on the other hand, when he gets the real thing, his heart will automatically become not only content, but ecstatic. So it's a matter of, you know, getting the real substance, you know. We are practicing the process. And the process is... The process is genuine. If the process is genuine, then the result will be there if you practice it properly. So that is the thing, like it's a matter of time. It will happen. And in the process, you know, like unless we reach that point, there may be various kinds of differences and difficulties. But you know, they are not that. They are not to be taken so seriously. Yes. Give her the mic.
You mentioned in the early achieve that the examples of Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, and I just wonder if Lord Shiva could be considered to be a devotee, a very exalted devotee, and so I kind of wanted to know what that means.
Very good. Very good. Yes, Lord Shiva is a very exalted devotee, but his situation is in Vaikuntha. You see, because they are in Vaikuntha, that's why it's rare for them to have this Braja Prem, because that's another dimension altogether, right? That's why I didn't go to that extent. It's even not only for Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, it's rare even for Lakshmi Devi, right? Because from Vaikuntha, Vrindavan is in another dimension. You know, which is not accessible otherwise. Actually, that's what happened. Lakshmi Devi wanted to see Rasa Leela. Lakshmi Devi wanted to enter into Rasa Leela. So Krishna said, okay, then you have to become subservient to some gopi of Vrindavan. Then Lakshmi Devi said, how can I be subservient to anyone else? I am Lakshmi. I am your eternal consort. Then Narayan said, then forget about going to Vrindavan. So then Lakshmi Devi was so upset, she performed very severe austerity. And then Krishna asked her, Krishna came to her and asked her, what happened? Why are you performing such severe austerity? Then Lakshmi Devi told that she wanted to go to Vrindavan. So then Krishna carried her on his chest as Sri Vatsya. And that's how Lakshmi Devi had entrance to Braja Leela. Yes, Arjun?
the only personality that can give us qualification to enter into Rajiva. But isn't our swarup fixed? So for example, Murari Gupta, he's actually Sri Hanuman. So he, there was a pastime, if I remember rightly, where he wouldn't chant Krishna's name because he, eternally, his connection was always with Lord Ram. So isn't our swarup, if we are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wouldn't we anyway be connected with Rajiva? Because isn't that an eternal connection? So how do we do reconcile this?
How do we?
How do we reconcile?
Murari Gupta's pastimes?
No. If our swarup is eternal,
yeah,
then surely we're eternally from Vrindavan, irrespective of whether Chaitanya Mahaprabhu descends or not.
Fortunately, we don't have any recollection of our swarup. That's why we are absolutely open to whatever comes.
So even if we were to follow Vaidhi Bhakti, if our eternal position was in Vrindavan, how would we go? We wouldn't go to Vaikuntha, would we?
No, Mahaprabhu is, that's right, like with the story of Gop Kumar, even though he was in Vaikuntha, he was not satisfied. And it's not that from Vaikuntha one cannot go to Vrindavan. One can. One has to come back to the earthly Vrindavan, perform Sankirtan, and go to Vrindavan. Anjali, did you have a question? Oh. Okay.
Well, one question. On
yeah,
the same
sure.
Talk, on the
sure.
Same theme is, what if someone's position is in Vaikuntha, and now we're coming in contact with Lord Chaitanya? Does it change? Because that always
if
comes
that's
out.
Why, that's why actually I mentioned that fortunately, or rather thank Krishna, that we don't remember our swarup. We don't have any recollection of our spiritual identity, whatever it may have been. Therefore, we are open to whatever comes. You know, like it will act as a hindrance. If we know about our spiritual identity or spiritual situation, then we will tend to be there. An example is Anupam, Rupa Goswami's brother. Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, he was a Ram Bhakta. Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami wanted to give him, he explained to him how Krishna Bhakti is superior. Krishna Bhakti is the highest and so forth. And he wanted to think about it overnight. The next morning he said, I thought about it and I can't give up my attachment to Lord Ramchandra. So when there is an individual who has such deep relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his Vaikuntha form or Ayodhya form, then yes, he will go there. That's fine. If that is his swarup, fine. But those who will have the opportunity to go to Vrindavan, they are extremely fortunate. That's a rare fortune being created by Chaitanya. Okay, yes?
It's not clear, so in regard to her question, so is it basically it's not, I mean, we are on that path, it's not possible that later on we are finding.
Say, for example, you see, your swarup is Vaikuntha can mean two things. That you have an intense attachment to Lakshmi Narayan or Ramchandra. So then, your, you know, you will not be able to, you know, shift your attachment from them to Krishna. If you are not able to shift your attachment to Krishna, then the understanding is, okay, carry on, because that is your actual attachment. Right? Like, if your heart is really attracted to Narayana, then what can be done? Like if you feel, well, I mean, I just want to worship Narayan, no one else, in this way. Then we have to understand that. Or, in course of your devotional practice, if you are elevated to Vaikuntha, and if you feel, oh, this is where I want to be, I don't want to go anywhere else, then we have to understand that that is your spiritual pursuit. But the point is, in most cases what will happen, those who have got the taste or information of Braja Prem, they are not going to settle for anything else. Oh, yes?
We are worshipping Radha Krishna the Apollo as Arjuna Vigraha form, but we are worshipping them indirectly. Could you elaborate a little more on that? Because
yeah, the thing is that, you see, as I mentioned earlier, that we have to follow Vaidic Bhakti, right? Although we are worshipping Radha Krishna, this worshipping of Radha Krishna in the temple is following Vaidic Bhakti. So Vaidic Bhakti worship is the object, although the object is Radha Krishna, but the personality is Lakshmi Narayana. So our temple worship is actually in the mood of Lakshmi Narayana worship. Should we go to the next point? I don't think I'll be able to cover four chapters. Anyway, let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
But these sessions are nice, yeah? Question answer sessions I find to be most productive and most beneficial. Okay, what is the first symptom, first characteristic of pure devotional service?
That was, no, the first one is that one gets rid of all kinds of distress.
Very good, very good. Yeah. Relief from? Relief from all kinds of distress. All kinds of material distress. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, Rupa Goswami is establishing these points through the scriptural evidences. Now, this statement, where it has been most wonderfully established, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papibhyo Mokshayishyami Masucha. This is one of the most popular verses of Bhagavad Gita. What is Krishna is saying? That you surrender unto me, giving up all your other engagements. Then I will deliver you from all your sinful reactions. Don't worry. So this is the point. You serve Krishna, Krishna will remove all the sinful reactions. And Krishna is assuring, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. So distress, suffering, what is the cause of suffering?
Sinful reaction.
We suffer due to sinful activity, sinful reaction. So when the sins are gone, all the sinful reactions are gone, will there be any suffering?
Yes. Because you still have the sins. If you stop committing sins, you may have the desire in your heart, or there are different stages of maturity.
But Krishna says, sarva papibhyo. All sinful reaction. So should I believe you or Krishna?
No.
Okay. So that is the point. That as you begin your devotional service, you become free from all your sinful reaction. And when you become free from sinful reaction, no more suffering. What you said is also correct. I was joking. That, you see, although we start our devotion service, we do not become adept in it right away. We do not achieve perfection straight away. We do not become absolutely free from sinful reactions. Because we do not become absolutely surrendered to Krishna. Krishna is saying, surrender unto me. But when we say, okay Krishna, I'll surrender to you. But what is the percentage of surrender? Maybe 10%. So 10% of sinful reactions are gone. 90% is still there. 90% is still there. Okay, you keep on practicing devotional service. Then what happens? Another 10% is gone. 80% is still there. Continue to practice. Another 20% is gone. 60% is still there. So to the extent we surrender, to that extent our sinful reactions are eradicated. And in this way, gradually we come to a point when sarva dharma paritaja really happens. 100% surrender to Krishna. And 100% free from sinful reactions. Meaning 100% freedom from distress. Right? Yes, you wanted to say something?
Oh, I was wondering about the sins that is not matured and the ones that is matured.
I was coming to that. Okay. Okay, then there are, first consideration is that the sins are the cause of distress. If the sins are removed, then distress will be gone. Now, sinful, it is not only sinful reactions, any action leads to reaction. Every action, to every action there is a
reaction.
There is an equal and opposite reaction. So that applies even in the spiritual context. As we act, accordingly we get the result of our action. As you sow, so shall you reap. So this is the material nature. Krishna set material nature in an autopilot. You know that autopilot? Autopilot is, you just set it and it moves on its own. You know, the operator doesn't have to do anything. So Krishna set this material nature in an autopilot. This autopilot is called guna and karma. Material nature has three modes and living entities are bound by the karmic reactions. The living entities are acting in different modes and accordingly they are getting different reactions according to the modes. And that's how it's going on and on and on. You did one thing, it generated a reaction. That, it not only generates one reaction, it generated millions of reactions. You know how complex this material nature is, or the reaction concept, action-reaction concept is? You plant a seed, what comes out of that seed? A tree. And in that tree there are many fruits. In those fruits there are many seeds. And in those seeds there are many trees. And those trees, seeds fall on the ground. How many trees come up? How many fruits grow in that seed? So this is how karmic reaction is. One little karma can bind us forever. Just one little karma can bind us forever. That's why it is impossible to get out of the karmic reaction. Anyway, the point actually is that this is how the living entities are set into autopilot. You remember the verse, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasaha ahankara vimuratma kartaham. Prakrite kriyamanani, everything is happening in the material nature due to guna karma, gunai karmani sarvasaha. But ahankara vimuratma, being bewildered by his false ego, a living entity thinks that I am the doer. Like I am lifting this kartal. And I am thinking that I am lifting this kartal. But actually, I am nothing but a puppet in the arrangement of guna and karma. And I just, somebody, somewhere, lift pull the string and I lifted this kartal, my hand lifted the kartal and I am thinking that I am the one who did that. That is our situation. From that verse we understand. Everything is happening due to gunai karmani sarvasarva. But being bewildered by a false ego, we are thinking that we are the doer. So in the material nature, we are, the point is, in the material nature, we are subjected to a karmic reaction. We are subjected to a karmic reaction. That means the karmic reaction means, in simple words, sinful reactions. Because if we are enjoying, then it's fine. What we distress, what we resent, is suffering, distress. So if there was no distress, this material nature would have been a wonderful place to live in. But unfortunately, this place is full of distress. I am simply trying to enjoy, but what I get is not enjoyment, but distress. So that's why it is so much importance has been given on sin. Sins are the cause of our distress. We don't want distress, we don't want suffering. Therefore, how to be free from the suffering condition? To become free from suffering condition is surrender. Surrender to Krishna means what? Surrender to Krishna means beginning of devotion. Adho Shraddha. Sharanagati. Sharanagati is the beginning. Surrender to Krishna is the beginning of our devotion. So when we surrender to Krishna, then we become free from our sinful reactions. But as I mentioned, it doesn't happen immediately. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. But it will work. And then it has been further described. There are sinful reactions are of two types. Some reactions have reaction. Action, reaction. Reaction means we are liable to some effect of our action. Now some actions are automatically results have already fructified. But some are not. And those that actions that have sinful reactions that haven't been fructified or that haven't been, we haven't gone through the results of those actions, they are three types. They are in a very dormant stage, kutam, then bijam, in a seed stage, and fallen mukham, about to be fructified. You see, there are mountains of karmic reactions. Many of those karmic reactions are deep, deep down, dormant in our heart. But then, but some are rising onto the surface. Those who are rising onto the surface, first they are in the bij form or in the seed form. But the seed now will fructify. And when it fructifies, then we experience it. Nothing happens by chance. I say we are sitting in this room, all of a sudden the ceiling caves in. Then we call it accident. But is it accident? No. It is our sinful reactions now are mature. And the fructification is falling of the ceiling on our heads. So that is how the karmic reaction, how complex this karmic reaction, or how progressive the karmic reactions are. So, you had actually this, does it explain your point you were asking?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, Anjali?
I was just going to say that there was a lightning right now, you heard the noise. It struck the door. So when you said the roof might fall, it could have happened here.
Oh!
Yeah. When we heard that, I was terrified.
Did anyone get hurt?
Lightning. Everybody's okay. That's what, I didn't see anybody hurt, but that noise was
lightning.
Yes. It's raining outside, I believe.
It was a thunderbolt. Because we are discussing Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Krishna protected us. See, like when we start our devotional service, we go through some natural, you know, progression. Like, you see, we are practicing, but we still have those conditioning. We still have those bad habits. We still have our attachments. But, you know, gradually devotional service starts to work. And as a result of that, we become free from those reactions. Now, in our devotional activity also, sometimes we have, say, conflict, some distressful situation. So there, we actually have to understand that it is happening due to karmic reaction. Like, sometimes, you know, we have a conflict with some other devotee. And the difference is that although we are conflicting, because we are devotees, we don't take it seriously. We know that it's just karmic reaction that's taking place. But had we not been devotees, probably we would have picked up, you know, guns and started fighting with each other. So it's and Prabhupada actually gives the example in this way. The fan has been switched off, but still it is moving. But there is no power behind it. Due to moment of inertia, it's moving. Similarly, due to our momentum, moment of inertia, we keep on moving in a certain direction, in a certain way. But it is not, it doesn't really have the effect that influences our consciousness anymore. Because we remain detached and we keep on progressing in the spiritual path. Does it answer your question?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
So when you're talking of the simple reactions as seeds, how it's been explained as seeds, so does this, how is this related to when we talk of the weeds of anatta and anatta? Is it
the sinful reaction?
Yeah, we like in act of devotion, it describes like a seed, how it is fructified, or either fructified or just a seed. So I'm just my question is like, how is this related to the weed of anatta and anatta? Like, is that?
Yeah, the anatta in a way can be also due to that, right? But devotional service is so wonderful that all the seeds get roasted, right? And once the seeds are roasted, then there is no possibility of them germinating, right? So that's what happens in devotional service. Yeah, karmic reactions are there, but the process of devotional service is fine. So the possibilities of fructification is not there. But you know, some reactions will continue because of our conditioning, because of our habits, because our inability to come to the platform of pure devotion, 100% devotional service, That's why there is still some reaction. Okay, should I continue? Okay. So we discussed about different levels of sinful reaction. Some are in a dormant stage, some are in a seed stage, and some are in a fructifying stage. Kutam bijam phalam mukham. Okay, now Prabhupada is explaining that mature sinful activities are exhibited if one is suffering from some chronic disease. How do you realize that the sinful reactions are maturing or coming to a fructifying stage? Fructifying, there is some chronic disease, there is some legal implication, or someone is born in a very poverty-stricken condition, degraded family, or someone is uneducated or very ugly. So these are the result of sinful reactions, fructifying sinful reactions. Now, Rupa Goswami is quoting instruction of Krishna to Uddhava. It's very dear, very wonderful. My dear Uddhava, devotional service unto me is just like a blazing fire which can burn into ashes unlimited fuel supplied to it. So what is the fuel? The fuel is sinful reactions. So devotional service can burn out any amount of sinful reaction. It's a blazing fire. No matter how much fuel you put in there, what will happen? It'll simply burn it out. They burn it into ashes. That is how effective Krishna consciousness is. Therefore, when you take to Krishna consciousness, we shouldn't worry about our sinful reaction. Whereas, on the other hand, the other processes cannot really take care of sinful reaction. They try through prayaschitta, atonement. Atonement is a kind of nullifying of sinful reactions. But one or two sinful reactions we can atone for. But what about mountains of sinful reactions? It is impossible. Another thing is, okay, while you are getting rid of one sinful reaction, another sinful reaction is coming in. So how are you going to deal with it? So that is impossible. Whereas in devotional service, it is automatically taken care of. You see, simple consideration is that you, as long as you are thinking that you are the doer, whatever you do, you become liable to the reaction. Is that point clear? As long as you think that you are the doer, you are liable to the reaction. But when you surrender to Krishna and do everything for Krishna's pleasure, then do you have any liability to your reaction? No. In this respect, Prabhupada gave a few very wonderful examples. One example is, you are a soldier. On behalf of the king, you fought a battle. You fought a battle, and in that battle, you killed many, many enemies. You come back to the kingdom after the war. The king awards you with a very special honor for killing thousands of people. King rewarded you, but on your own you kill one person afterwards. The same king who rewarded you for killing thousands of people punishing you. Isn't it a natural consequence? Now what, see the difference? When we act on our behalf, even for killing one person, we are liable to reaction. But when we act on behalf of the king and do something on behalf of the king rewards us. Same action, killing, but we are rewarded. So similarly, when we act on our behalf for our pleasure, for our sense gratification, for our enjoyment, we are liable. We are, whatever we do, we will get the reaction. But when we act on behalf of Krishna, then we are not responsible for any action. Because we are doing it on behalf of Krishna. And Krishna rewards us for whatever we do for Him. So that is how devotional service is so effective in getting rid of sinful reactions. And getting rid of sinful reactions means getting rid of the suffering condition, getting rid of the distressful situation. No more distress. So is it clear how devotional service frees one from distressful condition? So another quotation from Kapildev, from third canto, to his mother Devahuti. Mother Devahuti actually asking, telling her son, "My dear Lord, there are 9 different kinds of devotional service, beginning from hearing and chanting. Anyone who hears about your pastimes, who chants about your glories, who offer you obeisances, who thinks of you and in this way executes any of the 9 kinds of devotional service, even if he is born in a family of dog-eaters, the lowest grade of mankind, becomes immediately qualified to perform sacrifice." So this point indicates that pure devotional service can be executed by anybody. There is no consideration of one's caste and creed or qualification. Pure devotional service is for everybody. This point is very important because in India there was a misconception that these spiritual activities or religious performances are meant only for the Brahmana. Unless one is a Brahmana, one could not execute these services. But Sanatana Rupa Goswami is pointing out, quoting from the scriptures, that pure devotional service, other activities, yeah, Karmakanda section, Gyanakanda section is meant for certain class of people. Certain class of people meaning certain qualifications are necessary. But when it comes to pure devotional service, it's open to all. So the real relief from sinful reactions can come only through the performance of pure devotional service. And it can be done so as easily as chanting by chanting Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram.
Now we should be very careful that when we become free from sinful condition, we should not indulge in sinful activities anymore. That has been described as the bathing of an elephant, kunjara shnan. Kunjar means an elephant and shnan means bathing. it is said, I haven't seen it myself, the elephants go into water and bathe for a long, long time. And in this way they clean themselves. But as soon as they come onto the land, they take dust and smear it all over their body. So should our devotional service be like that? That we become, yes, by performing devotional service, we become free from sinful reactions, but as soon as we come out of that situation, we indulge in sinful activities again. Should we do that? Is it desirable? No. Therefore, once we take to Krishna consciousness, no more sinful activity. That's why we are so emphatic about following the four regulative principles. Because if we abstain from meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling, sin will not be able to even touch us. So that's why following these four regulative principles are so important. And then it is pointing out that what it prevents us from being engaged in devotional service is our ignorance, avidya. And this avidya leads to our false ego, which is our most difficult covering to overcome. And avidya, ignorance means what? Ignorance means not being aware of Krishna and our relationship with Krishna. Therefore, we have to overcome this ignorance by enlightenment. That's why it's so important that we read Prabhupada's books, we hear Bhagavatam classes and listen to senior devotees. And by doing that, we become situated in knowledge. And what is the best way to remove the darkness of ignorance? The light of knowledge. When the light of knowledge dawns, then darkness of ignorance will automatically be removed. Okay, so we have about 10 minutes for questions and answers pertaining to this discussion. Yes, Rajarshi Prabhu.
Maharaj, when you were answering someone's question, you explain about us not being the doer. You think you give the example of karma, but the modes are doing. So, the description of the pure devotee is under the divine, those who are not bewildered by the modes, they are under the protection of the divine nature. But those who are engaged in devotional service, saguna, they go beyond the modes. So, how is the activities being carried out for such a person? If I'm a conditioned soul, I think I'm the doer, but it's being activated or carried out by the modes. So what about the pure devotee? When he performs actions, what is the position of the modes, or what energy is he being impelled by?
Yeah. The modes will act only as long as one is conditioned. Only as long as one is averse to Krishna. Right? Only as long as one is forgetful of Krishna. Then what happens? He is covered by false ego. Right? And due to false ego, he thinks that he is the doer. And whatever he does, he becomes liable to the reaction. I did it, so I am responsible for the reaction. You see, by nature, as I said, autopilot. It's an arrangement of Krishna. Action, reaction. Different modes, different types of reactions. right? In mode of goodness, if we act, the reaction will be of one kind. Mode of passion, we act, the reaction will be of another kind. Mode of ignorance, we act, we reaction will be of another kind. Like say, for example, somebody is walking down the street and gets hit by a bicycle. The person in the mode of ignorance will start to cry. The person in the mode of passion will just get up and start punching the cyclist. And the person in the mode of goodness, he'll just brush up the dust and say, tell the cyclist, actually it's alright, don't worry. It's my fault. I should have been a little more careful while crossing the road. See, same action, in three different modes, the action will be different. And as a result of that, the reaction also will be different. The person who is in the mode of goodness, his reaction will be of one kind. And same with passion and ignorance. So that is the material nature's arrangement. Gunai karmani sarva. As we act, accordingly we get the reaction.
So the pure,
but I was coming to that. But pure devotion means, devotional service means not acting on my own, acting on behalf of Krishna. I am not, you know, like a devotee doesn't act for his pleasure. He is acting, but he is acting for Krishna. You see the difference? When he is acting for Krishna, who will be responsible for the reaction? That's it. And not only Krishna becomes liable to the reaction, but no reaction can touch Krishna. Right? But the devotee who is acting on behalf of Krishna, Krishna rewards him. And that reward, first as action, consideration of the reaction, is that freedom from his suffering condition. You are no more responsible for suffering condition anymore. You are acting on behalf of me, therefore I will take care of you. That is Krishna's assurance. That is the difference between acting on the material platform and acting on the spiritual. Right? Thank you. Yes?
So if a devotee is hit by a bicycle, you feel that it's Krishna's mercy that he hasn't been.
Very good.
Struck by a truck or something.
I can see what a wonderful devotee you are. Yes, a devotee will think that way. So this is how he transcends even the mode of goodness. In mode of goodness he says, okay, it's not your fault, it's my fault. That's all right. But in the mode, in pure spiritual platform, in mode of Visuddha Sattva, he says, well, it was Krishna's arrangement. Krishna put me through this situation. And he thanks the cyclist. Thank you, Prabhu, for teaching me such a wonderful lesson. So that is the event beyond the mode of goodness. Yes.
Just a little comment there. With suffering comes the life of a devotee also. The devotee doesn't sort of blame anyone. He understands it as the reaction to his own sinful activity. One comment also is that sometimes I think that some little doses of distress is good in the life of a devotee to sort of remind us that the material world is a place of distress. If everything was just like so perfect, then we wouldn't want to go back. you know, you want to intensely, you know, struggle.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. So that's the point. Like devotee sees that is Krishna's arrangement to free him from material bondage. Yes, Manananda.
It seems that there must be another situation also when devotees suffer. Because, like, look at the life of the Pandavas. They suffered so much, but that was, was that their karmic reaction, Maharaj?
Yeah, they are participating in Krishna's pastime. So pastimes are like a play on the stage. You enact it, but you don't get affected by that. And you play the role so well that the audience get awestruck.
And then it's that play that's for instructing others.
Others, yeah, yeah. Pastimes are meant for educating others. Yes?
Analogy that it's like a play, an actor in a play, although they're portraying suffering or they're portraying things, they're not actually experiencing them. Are we to believe that although, like, because he didn't experience deeply experience this, which made her closer to Krishna, or was she just playing? You know what I mean? I don't believe that she was just playing.
You see, a very good actor or actress, they become that person. And go through. That's why they are able to act in such a way. They become that personal. They go through the situation themselves. What to speak of, you know, the pastimes where Lord is making arrangement. You see here, I mean, it's just an example, like a play. The difference between a play is it is performed on a stage and one kind of memorizes the dialogues and delivers them and so forth. But Krishna's pastimes are organized by Yoga Maya. Just as in a play there is a director, the director of Krishna's play, Krishna's pastimes is Yoga Maya. And Yoga Maya has the potency to make the people feel what they are meant to feel. The role that they are playing, they become that. So Krishna's pastimes, everything is real. His pastimes are also real, whereas a play is unreal. It's enacted. But Krishna's pastimes are like, it's like a play because Krishna doesn't need to go to that. Krishna doesn't need to come here. Krishna doesn't need to go through whatever he goes through. But he does it in order to teach us some lesson. And those who come with him, they perform, you know, certain characters, perform certain roles. And it is like a drama in another sense. You see, drama means conflict. Right? Drama means conflict. And the greater the conflict, better the drama. Right? So similarly, in Krishna's pastimes, it's full of conflict. Because Krishna comes in a conflict between who? The protagonist and antagonist. Right? Here Krishna is the protagonist and the demons are the antagonist. Right? And there is this conflict. And those who watch, they just go, wow. Yes?
Did Queen Kunti actually pray that let the troubles come again, so I only think of you for Krishna?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing, as I was saying, you see, there's a difference between drama and Krishna's pastime. In drama, you memorize the dialogues and deliver them. But in Krishna's pastimes, these personalities become that, you know, be in that situation and act in certain way. And ultimately what they do is they display their love for Krishna and develop their love for Krishna and enables others to also develop their love for Krishna. So I'll stop now. Thank you very much. All glories to Sri Prabhupada.
Gaur Premanande. So just a reminder to the